So, like I said on the email, this will be our last week for the season here in the JCC. And next week, it seems that we'll be in Ezra's Israel on Montrose Road. I'll send out the address for those who don't know where that is. It's for the summer. We're back here again, God willing, in the fall. That'll be our plan. We attempted the Rink House. Unfortunately, they didn't have space for us this time of day. So I think Ezra's Israel is our next bet. So that'll be beginning next week. We'll be in Ezra's Israel next Tuesday. So the next mitzvah I want to discuss from the Torah actually is in last week's Parsha, Parshas Naso. And the mitzvah, again, is one which in our minds seems somewhat irrelevant, a little bit obscure, not obscure in terms of mitzvah, but obscure in terms of modern times. But yet, as I always say, we have to understand how it applies to us this very day. Everything the Torah applies throughout all generations, it's always relevant, and we always have to find the relevance. So in last week's Parsha, it discusses how the princes of each tribe, they donated wagons to the Mishkan. The wagons were supposed to be for the Levites to use to transport all the materials. The Mishkan was, was a traveling mobile sanctuary, so they had to be able to move it around. It consisted of curtains, consisted of beams, consisted of all sorts of heavy items and vessels. And it traveled throughout the desert for the 40 years the Jews were in the desert. So there was a donation made to the cause of the Levites of wagons and cattle to pull the wagons. The Torah tells us that there are three Levite families, Gershon, Kahath, and Merari. The family of Gershon, they carried the curtains of the Mishkan. The family of Merari carried the beams of the Mishkan. And the family of Kahath, they carried the vessels of the Mishkan, which included the menorah, the table for the showbread, the holy ark, etc. That was carried by the family of Kahath. The Torah says that these wagons that were donated were distributed only amongst two families. There were six wagons. Four of the wagons were given to Merari because they carried the heaviest items. They had these beams to carry. Two of the wagons were given to the family of Gershon because they used those to carry the curtains of the Mishkan. But Kahath got no wagons. And the Torah says, why did the family of Kahath get no wagons? Because it says, this is chapter 4 in the book of Bamidbar, with Nekahath Lanasan, there were no wagons given to the children of Kahath, ki avodas hakodesh alehem, for the service, the holy service is upon them, but kaseif yisol, they shall carry upon their shoulders. So what they were carrying, the vessels of the Mishkan, those vessels were not supposed to be carried in a wagon. That was only carried upon their shoulders. They carried those by hand. The mitzvah is quoted as a mitzvah for all generations, that the holy ark, when it was ever was transported, it would be carried on the shoulders of the Levites, or possibly the Kohanim. We'll discuss that in a minute. But you were not allowed to put it onto a wagon. In modern terms, you could put it onto a truck or a car or anything else either. It has to be done on the shoulders of those who are carrying it. That's the mitzvah. And this is a mitzvah cited as one of the 613 mitzvahs. There's a dispute here, and we'll go through some technical points before we get to the message and the idea. There's a dispute here between Rambam Maimonides and Ramban and Nachmanides. Rambam says that in the desert, it has to be carried by the Levites, but afterwards, it has to be carried by the Kohanim. He says in future generations, there's a mitzvah that the Kohanim, the priests, they would carry the Holy Ark, the Aron. However, Nachmanides argues, and he says that no, the mitzvah doesn't change in every generation, and just like in the desert it's carried by the Levites, so too afterwards it's carried by the Levites as well. But he says, you have to know that Kohanim are also called Levites. They're all the same family. The tribe of Levi was split into two. Part of them were made into Kohanim, part made into Levites. So therefore, Kohanim are certainly allowed to carry the Holy Ark, but so are Levites. And that's the dispute between Maimonides and Nachmanides as to who is allowed to carry it for future generations. The simple understanding of this mitzvah is it's the honor of the Torah to be carried by hand, on shoulders. To throw it into a wagon is somewhat of a disrespect. Obviously, they throw it in, they put it in nicely, but somewhat of a disrespect to put the Holy Ark into a wagon, and therefore we have this mitzvah that we should be carrying it on our shoulders. Additionally, the mitzvah was done by the Levites, who are looked at as the most honorable of people amongst all the tribes, and therefore to have the Ark carried on the shoulders of our highest tribe, that was considered the honor for the Holy Ark. Now, it's very interesting. It records in the book of Shmuel, of Samuel, that King David made this mistake. And also, it's also quoted as well in the book of Chronicles, Divrei HaYamim, that David and Melech, King David himself, he was transporting the Holy Ark to Jerusalem. He actually had it on a wagon initially. And a tragedy happened that somebody, the wagon started shaking, and somebody, his name was Uzzah, he reached out and he tried to support the Holy Ark, and he died because of it. God punished him for trying to catch the Holy Ark, the Aron. But it's pointed out by the sages, Maimonides points it out as well, that King David made this mistake, that he didn't understand this verse properly. The verse in the Torah, as we just read, says you have to always carry the Ark on your shoulders. And King David carried it, put it onto a wagon. Now the question is, what did he misunderstand? I mean, if it's, we can all read it in black and white here in the Chumash, what was he missing out on, King David? Why did he think that he was allowed to put the Ark in a wagon? So there's three different approaches to this, that at least that I could discover. One approach is by the Malbim, by one of the great commentaries in the Torah. And he says that King David understood that this mitzvah, this obligation to carry the ark only on your shoulder, not in a wagon, was only in the times of the Jews in the desert. He understood that after the Jews settled in the land of Israel, they're allowed to carry it in a wagon. That was his mistake. The Naftali Sefer Berlin, the Hamik Dover, another commentary in the Torah, he writes that King David thought that the only time that you had to have it on your shoulders was if it was a Levite transporting it. But if somebody else transported it, you can put it in a wagon. So he understood this whole verse was only a command to the Levites. It says if you're a Levi and you want to transport the ark, you must put it on your shoulders. But if you're from another tribe, you can transport whatever you want. So he made that mistake. The third approach, which I found, is in the commentary of Oznaim LaTorah by Rav Zalman Sorotkin. He writes that if you look earlier in the book of Samuel, there was a major miracle which happened to the ark. The ark was actually taken by the Philistines. And it was there in the Philistine territory for a while, the Plishtim. And as you know, when it was in their territory, you know, God punished them greatly for stealing the Holy Ark. So they sent it back. They sent it back into Israel. The way they did it was they put it onto a wagon, and they attached cattle to the wagon, and they just sent it off. And they were relying upon the fact that miraculously God would direct that wagon to where it needed to go. And that's what happened. The wagon, you know, walked in a straight line and ended up where it needed to go, back in the land of Israel. But since King David understood the magnitude of that miracle, he understood that he actually used the same exact wagon that was used for this miracle, is what this commentary says, based on earlier sources. And therefore, King David thought that even though typically you're not allowed to put it on a wagon, this wagon already involved in such a great miracle, such a sanctification of God's name, this is an appropriate place to put the ark, because this is actually going to recognize the miracle even further. And that's why he put it on the wagon. He was wrong, because again, the mitzvah is, no matter what, you can't put it on a wagon. But those are three different reasons as to why King David made this mistake. But we do see in the book of Samuel that King David made this mistake, and that's why, and there was a punishment which came of it. After the fact, after this tragedy happened and Uzzah died, at that point they realized they did something wrong and they started carrying it on their shoulders once again. That's what happened in that story. So let's try to understand a little more of the deeper meaning of this mitzvah. We discussed, I think, a couple years back in this class, the idea that there's a mitzvah, the prohibition in the Torah, that the ark was built with rings and there's poles put through the rings. And the Torah prohibits you from ever removing those poles. Those poles remain in those rings forever. Even to this very day, wherever the ark is hidden, we'll talk about that later, those poles are still inside the ark. Now, what's the meaning of that mitzvah we discussed back then? I mean, there's many different explanations to it. But one idea is that the fact that you have these poles always in the ark shows the Torah something which applies no matter where you are, in all places, in all times. It's ready to be picked up and taken with you no matter where you go. I mean, you can't say the Torah is sitting there in the sanctuary. Now I'm not in my daily life. It's not relevant to me. Rather, the Torah has poles. The Torah is mobile. And the Torah moves around with you wherever you go. And that's part of the symbolism of those poles. So those poles are put on the shoulders of the Levites carrying the ark. Now, the one commentary points out that typically, if you look through the Torah in the original Hebrew, so whenever you're talking about holding something on your shoulders, usually it says al kasif, on your shoulders, the word al. In this verse discussing the ark, and also in the book of Divrei Yamim, in Chronicles, the same idea when it discusses the ark, it says ba kasif, which literally means in your shoulders. You carry it in your shoulders. Maybe with your shoulders or in your shoulders, but the typical terminology is on your shoulders. So the same commentary I quoted before, Zalman Sorotkin, he points out that the Torah is stressing to us an important lesson. That when you're carrying the ark, you have to have your mind in total focus. It's not just on your shoulders, but it's as if you've absorbed the entire ark. It's in your shoulders. It's, you know, it's part of you. The goal of somebody who is bearing the load of Torah, as we'll talk about it more in a symbolic way, is not just that, you know, there's yourself and there's the Torah and I strive to fulfill what it says. Rather, it should be in us, meaning something that absorbs into us. Bach has safe, it's in our shoulders. Meaning that when they picked up the ark, the goal was their mind should be so focused on what they were doing, they're totally absorbed in the activity. It wasn't just a load they were carrying on their shoulders, but yet it was something which absorbed them through and through. Now, the idea of shoulders, I want to discuss this idea of the symbolism of shoulders in general. And just to keep in mind, the halakha here, you can't hold it with your hands even. You have to put it on your shoulders, the Torah says. And the shoulder has to go on the shoulders. The sages talk about often, you find it both in verses of the Torah, and plus you find it throughout the Talmud. You find the idea of the kaseif, which is the word used here for shoulder, being a place to bear a burden. Even in English, we talk about shouldering a burden. It means somebody with broad shoulders to take this on. It means someone who could take on a big mission, a responsibility. You have broad shoulders. The Torah talks about the when Jacob is giving blessings to his sons. So he discusses the blessing he gives to Yisachar. And it says, V'yit shichmo lispol. He tilted his shoulders to bear a load. It's always the concept of bearing a heavy load. That's how we view the shoulders in this terminology. The sages tell us in the Talmud, they say that the primary animal used in their days for work on a farm was an ox. The ox. And it says the most beautiful place on the ox is its shoulders. Meaning that's where you put the yoke. I mean, the ox's whole purpose for the farmers was that they wanted it to bear a yoke so they can, you know, plow their fields and they can do whatever they need to do with the ox as their tractor. And the ox was basically their tractor back then. So the rabbis tell us that the greatest, the most beautiful place on the ox is going to be in the shoulders. Because that's where it fulfills its purpose. So its shoulders are beautiful and that they fulfill its purpose. So when you carry the ark on your shoulders, so we know that the Aron, the ark, represents the Torah. It bears the Torah inside of it. The tablets, it represents the Torah to us. And when you bear the ark on your shoulders, it's representative of our commitment to bear the Torah upon our shoulders. That we are committing ourselves to carry the responsibility of fulfilling the Torah for all generations. So but what we said before, it's bakasif, it's in your shoulders. Because we can't view the Torah as something which is external to us. It's not something which, you know, I'm myself, the Torah is there, I do what I can, you know, when it's convenient for me. But rather, it's a commitment that I want to become one with God's Word. I want it to be absorbed within me. I want to make sure every move I make is somehow in line with the Torah's desires. That's always the goal of a Jew. We find the Holy Ark. It's not only the mitzvah here that says that the Ark has to be on the shoulders. It's actually very fascinating. Because of Divrei Yomim, the Book of Chronicles. So it discusses what the rabbis see as the source that the ark was hidden away. It says that the king Yoshiyahu, who was one of our better kings throughout the time of the Jewish kings, so he foresaw the destruction, he foresaw the Jews being exiled, and he said that we have to hide away the ark. We don't want the hands of the Babylonians to at all defile the ark. We have to hide it away. And the Talmud tells us that Shlomo HaMelech, King Solomon, when he built the temple, had tunnels dug under the temple, hidden tunnels. And these tunnels were destined to be the place to hide away in certain vessels if that time ever came. So Yoshio HaMelech, King Yoshio, at that point decided to hide away the ark in these tunnels under the Temple Mount. And to this very day, we assume that somewhere under the grounds of Jerusalem, who knows where, is where the Holy Ark is hidden. There are stories here and there of somebody thinking they encountered where it was. You know, there's a lot of different stories out there. You can always, you know, find those stories or interesting stories. But ultimately, the sages tell us that it says in the Talmud, in Maseches Yuma, it says that King Yosho hid away the ark under the Temple Mount in these hidden tunnels. And that was all based on a verse in the book of Divrei Yomim, the Chronicles. But what does that verse say? The verse says, "Ein lachem on masa bekaseif." You will no longer have the load for your shoulders. It refers to the ark as a load on your shoulders. Now we're dealing here with approximately, I would say, 800 years post the Jews being in the desert. And the ark has not been transported probably since the temple was built, which is a few hundred years back. But yet, it still calls it the load on your shoulders. Meaning that what? That the Torah sees that no matter where the ark is, even if you're not actually carrying it around physically, it's always called the load on your shoulders. That's how we view the ark. The ark is a load on our shoulders. Because it's a responsibility to shoulder the burden. That's what it is. The same way we use it in English. You shoulder the burden. And it's stressing to us the idea that there's an extra, when you're carrying the ark, there has to be the extra focus of mind and thought on what you're doing. So we as Jews always have to carry this burden of Torah, no matter where we are, and find it as it's our responsibility. Now I want to look a little more at this metaphor to the ox. Because the rabbis, very often throughout the Talmud, look at the shoulders of the ox as a place to carry burdens. The Torah, we actually refer to as the old Torah, the yoke of Torah. We talk about that. That terminology is used throughout the Talmud, that we accept upon ourselves the yoke of Torah, or the we refer to even Shema, the Shema prayer, which is our exclamation of our belief in the one and only God. It's referred to by the rabbis as Kabbalas Ol Malchus Shemaim. Except find yourself the oak of the kingdom, the yoke of the kingdom of heaven. It's a yoke. Now I don't think any of us are farmers, but just to understand what the role of a yoke. I mean, in their days, everyone was a farmer. The role of a yoke is that you have an ox. It's a very strong animal, very powerful. You want to somehow utilize its power to plow your field. So you put a yoke on top of it, and you can attach to that yoke any tool you want. You can attach a plow, you can attach harvesting tools, whatever tool you need, you can attach to that yoke. So the yoke is a way, it's bearing a burden, it's a responsibility, because now there's a job to be done. But it also channels your energy to be productive. If you don't put the yoke on the ox, it'd run around like an animal. If you put the yoke on the ox, now you can channel its power, its energy, towards your purpose that you want it to do. So we talk about the Torah being on our shoulders, like a yoke on our shoulders. And the point of that is to say that the Torah is something which, yes, it's challenging, it's hard. You know, it takes energy, like the ox with the yoke. It takes a lot of energy for the ox to plow the field. But yet, it allows us to channel our energy towards the service of God. The human being is extremely powerful. We have so much we can do, you know, physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually. There's so much we can do, so much to accomplish. But we want to make sure that all that energy gets channeled towards God's purposes and God's will in this world. Keep on going with the analogy. So we want to steer in the right direction. We want all the energy to be used up. We want to be able to be productive. So we say there's a yoke of the Torah. There's a yoke of God upon us. What that means is that we are now harnessing our energy and using it for the service of God. That's the goal. The Torah is always viewed as, again, the load to bear upon our shoulders. It's this yoke upon our shoulders. That's how we always view the Torah. So when the Levites are told that you must always carry the ark upon your shoulders, it's not. It means literally they have to carry the physical ark upon their shoulders, but it also means symbolically that every single Jew has to constantly be sure that the yoke of Torah is upon their shoulders. You can't throw it into the wagon and say, okay, it'll get there. It doesn't mean me. You have to have it upon your shoulders as responsibility, channeling all the energy that you have towards serving God in some way. That's our goal. Another very interesting reference to shoulders. It's funny talking so much about shoulders, but another funny, interesting reference to shoulders is that when Moshe is giving his blessings to the 12 tribes, at the very end of the Torah, so he blesses the tribe of Benjamin. And when he tells Benjamin, he discusses Benjamin Amar, he said to Benjamin, Yedid Hashem, Yishkon Levetach Alav. He is the one who is Yedid Hashem, the beloved of Hashem. He shall dwell in security upon him. He kind of hovers above him the entire day. He shall dwell between kaseifav, literally his shoulders. So that description is understood in the commentaries in many ways. But the way that Rashi understands it is that it's referring to the temple being built in the portion of Benjamin. When we divvied out the land in Israel, so Jerusalem was split between, essentially the temple now was split between Benjamin and Yehuda. Benjamin and Yehuda, and the temple was built, the actual building of the temple, the Holy of Holies, was in the portion of Benjamin. This description that he shall dwell between his shoulders, so physically what it means is that the shoulder referred to some sort of mountain ledges, I think, or mountains. It's geographically what juts out of the map, those are the shoulders, and then the God dwells, the temple dwells within. But the terminology is the shoulders. It's sort of terminology of the shoulder. So the idea is the shoulder kind of is, you know, high in your body, it juts out. That's the connection between the two terms. But you find the Torah says that God dwells between the shoulders of the women of Israel. That's the terminology the Torah is using here in the book of Devarim. So again, it's the same concept. That even though, again, you can understand that verse in many ways, but you can't ignore the fact the term shoulders is used. Which means that even in the land of Israel, the way that we recognize God is that God rests in between the shoulders. That's the way we do it. It recognizes our mission to serve God, to bear the yoke of God at all times, and to be sure that the place of the center place of the Jewish people, the temple, where God dwells, where the Torah, where the Ark is placed, where the service is done to God, it's referred to as the place between the shoulders. That's that place is referred to for all of history. And the idea, again, is the same concept, that the Torah is something which we're bearing a yoke. It's a responsibility. We have to take on the burden. But yet it's a way in which we channel our energy and use it to be productive and make sure at all times we're doing the service of God. So that's the this idea of the shoulders. Now, it sounds very difficult. I mean, to say that, I mean, if you picture the ox having to put on a yoke and having to travel, or having to go and plow the field bearing a yoke with a heavy plow behind it, sounds like a hard job. And to say that our job is always to be bearing a yoke and to carry this weight on our shoulders, it sounds like an overwhelming task in some ways. You know, that every moment of the day we have this weight on our shoulders. But the Talmud tells us something very interesting. The Talmud says in the Masechta Sota, it talks about how the Jews crossed over the Jordan to enter into the land of Israel for the very first time with Yeshua, with Joshua. And you can look at the book of Joshua to see the exact description of what happened. But the way that it seems to be described, there's the famous miracle that the Jordan River was split. It kind of stopped running and the rest of it kept on going. So there was dry land in the Jordan River. The tribes all crossed over the river. But the way it describes it, it seems that the Kohanim were standing right in the middle of the river where the water stopped. And when all the Jews crossed, the water started going again, the Kohanim had to run back to the far side of the Jordan. And they didn't get a chance to go with the Ark across the Jordan. So Talmud says what happened, how'd they get across? It says that the Ark actually carried them across, as if they were grabbing onto it, and they flew across, holding onto the Ark. It's a famous concept, they call it Aron Noses Nosa, that the Ark carries those who carry it. That's the concept that the Talmud says. The Ark carries those who carry it. Now again, that there it means literally. It means the miracle happened, and they kind of flew over the river, holding onto the Ark. But symbolically, it's a very powerful thought. Because symbolically, many, many commentators explain it this way. Symbolically, what it means is that even though it sounds very difficult to bear the burden of Torah, to take on that yoke, to carry around the Ark is a heavy thing. I mean, the Ark itself was a fairly heavy, you know, with wood and gold, it's a fairly heavy box. It was a very heavy box. But symbolically, if we commit ourselves to bearing the yoke of Torah, the Torah then carries us to where we need to go. Meaning, once we bear that yoke, we say that the Ark carries those who carry it. That we'll find that it's much easier than we think. When you commit to Torah, when you make the commitment to God, you bear that yoke. When you say "Bekas Seif Yisrael," you carry the Torah upon your shoulders. So once you take it on, God assists you and helps you get to where you need to go. So as the Jews, as the Kohanim stood there on the Jordan and they committed to bearing the Ark upon their shoulders, so God then helped let the Ark lift them up. So the Torah lifts us up. The Torah will give us a special divine assistance in helping us get through to go, despite the fact it sounds so difficult. If we make that commitment, then God commits back to us again. That's how we view it. And the truth is, I don't think it only means a broader commitment to the Torah in general, but even in specific areas. If there's certain areas in life that we're challenged with, and we say, that's just too hard for me to do. You know, it's just too hard for me to stop speaking Lashon Hara. It's just too hard for me to control my temper. It's just too hard for me to pray every day or focus on my prayers, have kavana. If anything, whatever you say is too hard for you. But if you make that commitment, like you're bearing the yoke, you're bearing the ark upon your shoulders, so then we have this concept, the ark will then carry you. As long as the commitment is made, then we're guaranteed a certain help from God that we'll be able to overcome the challenge at some point. That's what we're guaranteed. So even though it seems like an overwhelming task, we should know when we do commit to bearing the load, God's there to help us. Now there's a little deeper point, which is brought out here in the Midrash, which I want to discuss. The term, as we said, used in the Torah for carrying the Ark is "Bakaseif Yisa'u." You shall carry it upon your shoulders. So the Talmud tells us, and the Midrash also tells us, it's all coming from the same sources, that the term "Yisa'u," which literally means they shall lift or they shall carry, is connected with the term Su'u Zimra Usunu Sof. It says in the book of Tehillim of Psalms, it says you shall lift up in song, you shall essentially, you know, should play drums. It talks about playing music. So it talks about singing to God, playing music. And the rabbis make the connection that there's a correlation between the term Yisrael, lifting up the ark, and playing music. In our minds, we don't see any connection at all. I mean, it happens to be a similar term used in both locations in the Torah. But what is exactly, what's the connection between lifting up the ark and playing music? It's a very strange connection. Often you find this in the Midrash. The Midrash often will find two verses in different, very different parts of the Torah and draw connections. It doesn't always explain why the connection is drawn. It just makes the connection. And then it's left up to us to figure out what exactly did it mean. Why are these two things correlated? So we have to think about what's the connection between lifting up the ark and music. And also it's interesting to note as well, the term in Hebrew used to play music is se'u zimra. Now, usually when you use the word lift to play music, you would say, I don't know what the proper term would have been, but se'u is not necessarily the term we would use. Se'u means to lift up the music. We would say play music, create music, praise with music, right? Zamru, yeah, zamru bezimra, whatever it is. You know, there's a lot of ways it could say, or just zamru, right? Zamru snusof, but it says se'u zimra. So there in Psalms, the term used is a strange term. The Hebrew term uses a strange term. We can understand what it means. So let's understand the connection between lifting up the ark and playing music. That's going to be our goal right now. So one approach is said, again, by the Sefer Oznaim LaTorah of Zalman Suratskin, same commentary quoted before. He writes that this is a source for us, that it's a mitzvah that when you're transporting the ark, you should do it in joy, in happiness, in song. Whenever the Levites would transport the ark, it should be done in a happy attitude, in a happy atmosphere. We find that when King David transported the ark, and we discussed before, he made a mistake, he put it on a wagon. But when he transported the ark, it was done with a lot of fanfare, a lot of song, a lot of dance, a lot of music. There's a special honor given to the ark that you do it with this great celebration. And again, symbolically means that when you take on the yoke of Torah, we should do it with a joy. We should understand that the Torah is a special mission. It's a special privilege that we have. And therefore, when you serve God, you should be filled with happiness. And when you bear the yoke of God, you bear the yoke of the Torah, you do it with a happy attitude, with a joy, with a simcha. So that's one understanding of the connection between music and the shoulders. And then carrying on the shoulders. But I want to understand one deeper point. This deeper point is found in the Sfas Emes. Sfas Emes was the Gera Rebbe. He was a tremendous, tremendous Torah scholar. He wrote commentaries on many parts of the Torah, both halacha commentaries, wrote on the Torah, he wrote a lot of things. And the Sfas Emes, he makes an interesting point when it comes to this idea of carrying the ark versus music. He actually cites the Zohar, a Kabbalistic source. He cites that, we mentioned before this miracle, when the Philistines sent back the ark, they put it onto a wagon, and they attached cows to the wagon, and it kind of just went on its own and got to the right place. So the term used there in the book of Shmuel, the book of Samuel, it says, Visharna haparos. Literally, it means in context that the cows walked straight. They didn't veer off, they walked straight to Israel. No, they didn't veer off left or right. But the Zohar points out that the Yisharna could also be understood as they sang. Shir, to sing. And it says that it could also mean that the cows sang as they transported the ark. I don't know, moo, 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 I don't know what they're singing. But they sang something.
Music.
You can tell your kindergarten teacher. Right?
Yeah. Godmother will pop the sticks, you know.
So, but the Zohar says that the cows actually sang as they transported the ark. So again, there's this correlation of transporting the ark and singing. What's that correlation? So the Sfas Emes writes, he says that any servant of God, I'm translating it from the Hebrew, he says any servant of God is filled with, he says ziv, which is, you know, a splendor, the simcha, and great joy, through their sincere service of God. Meaning what? One who serves God with sincerity, with purity, they bring out the greatest inner joy in a person. I mean, a person, what does it mean? The term we use is simcha. Simcha is joy. What's the idea of simcha? What's the idea of feeling joy? Feeling joy doesn't mean that I dance and I act frivolous, but it means that I feel personally content. I feel complete. I feel fulfilled. That's the greatest joy. We talked about one having a joy on Yom Tov, on a holiday. The point is that you should feel that fulfillment of being connected with God. It's not just, it doesn't just mean the externals, it means the internal joy. That's what it means. We feel joy at a wedding, we feel joy at a bar mitzvah, we feel joy at a birth, we feel joy on many occasions because we feel a certain content, that somebody has reached a point of fulfillment, and it makes us happy as well. So the Torah is something which we view as kind of the manual to human life, teaching us this is how you function as a human being, this is what you're supposed to do, this is how you can bring out the best of your potential, the best of who you are. Somebody who bears this, we call the yoke of Torah, somebody who lifts it up on themselves, so like we carry around the Aron, that accesses within the person their inner potential, that brings out their best productivity and fulfillment, and that should bring out the greatest simcha and joy in a person. So when it says se'u zimra, that you should burst out in song, what it means is that when one actually bears the ark, if you carry the ark, if you saw, you bear the ark on your shoulders, so the person naturally bursts out in song. It's not contrived. We don't say, well, we're having the ark, so we should dance and sing. It's that somebody who really feels fulfilled to observing the Torah, that person should feel a life of joy. That person should want to burst out in song and dance because they feel so happy. Everybody has their own potential in life. Everyone has their mission. Everyone has what they need to perform and how they are going to produce and fulfill in their own lives that they have. But if you're able to tap into that, the Torah we view as the tool to help us tap into our own personal mission, you should feel a sense of joy. You should want to sing to God. It should give you a sense of fulfillment. The terminology used in the Tehillim is se'uzim, or lift up in music. So that's the idea of lifting up, is that it's coming out from within. It's not that you just happen to play a song, but the music comes from within the person. That if you feel that you are fulfilling your purpose, you feel content in life, you feel fulfilled, then naturally music comes out of you. You feel happy. You feel you have a reason to rejoice. And joy should be considered a natural result of a committed lifestyle towards God. It's a natural result of a lifestyle committed to God. The famous work, the Kuzari, we've mentioned him before, but he writes that there's really three pillars of the service of God. He says there's the love of God, there's the fear of God, and there's the simcha, there's the joy in the service of God. That's what he writes. So we understand that the love and fear of God, that's what moves us to serve God. If you don't love God, then you're not motivated to serve Him. If you don't fear Him, then nothing keeps you in line. But what's the point of the joy? The joy is that if you're doing it right, that should be a natural outcome. I mean, to us, that's kind of like the test. Like, if I don't feel joy in what I'm doing, I'm missing something. I feel I'm missing part of myself, I don't understand the Torah, I'm not connecting with God in the right way. If I don't feel joy, I'm missing something. But if I love God and I fear God and I serve God with commitment, that should naturally bring us to a state of joy. And this is what the Sfas Emes continues. He writes that the joy is actually a testimony and the person is truly connected with God. When that person feels the joy, that should be to them testimony they're actually connecting with God. The joy is the proof. The proof is in the pudding. That's the joy is the proof. Rav Noach Weinberg, who was the founder of Eshet Torah, passed away a few years back. So he has a whole series of lectures. He really discusses kind of the basics of faith. And he goes through different ideas of the proof of God and proof of Torah. And one of the things he refers to, he calls it the experiential proof. He says that, you know, you can't describe this to an outsider, but somebody who actually lives a life committed to God and committed to Torah, the sense of fulfillment and joy that they actually experience, that in and of itself is testimony to God. That's what he says. And he points out, he says, you know, it's interesting, you walk into a yeshiva, and you can look at a 19-year-old boy studying by himself, and often you'll see him kind of singing, chanting, singing. There's a certain joy involved in the study of Torah. And he says that itself is experiential proof, that if you don't experience it, you don't understand it, but if you do experience it, that itself shows that this is God's word, and I'm living a lifestyle of fulfillment. So that itself is testimony to the Creator, testimony to the Torah. That's what he writes. That's what Sassamus writes. So that's the deeper point of this concept of correlation between music and bearing the ark, is that when you bear the Torah upon yourself, you have that commitment, you have that devotion, you take on the burden, and you let it channel your energy towards God, so then automatically the person should feel joy, feel content, and want to burst out in song. That's where it should go in our lives. I always find it interesting that in the cycle of the Jewish year, according to the Torah's calendar, we begin the month of Nisan, and the first holiday is actually Pesach, Passover. Then, if you go through the Torah's calendar, the final holiday in the Torah would be Shmini Atzeres, Sukkot Shmini Atzeres. And our custom is to end Shmini Atzeres with Simchas Torah. We sing and dance the Torah. So the entire cycle of the Jewish year, of the holiday cycle, leads to that one day of singing and dancing. Because that's always the goal. Somebody has been through the holiday cycle and has developed that devotion to God. That should leave them with the feeling of song, of singing and dancing. That's what should leave them. That's what should become of it. So this mitzvah of the Levites having to carry the ark on their shoulders goes far beyond just how he carried the ark. I mean, yes, they had to carry it on their shoulders. But it applies to us in every generation. It's an attitude towards the service of God, towards varying the commitment, towards channeling energy towards God. And it's an attitude of the joy that comes of it. Bearing the burden can be scary. It could be hard. You know, it sounds like an overwhelming task. If you call it a burden, that means it's something which is difficult. But like we said, the ark carries those who carry it. If you take on the yoke of Torah, God helps you. And it should lead a person to really great joy in their lives, because you should feel that sense of fulfillment and content in the service of God. And the ultimate result should be that the Se'u Zimra, you should lift up in song, that naturally the song should kind of burst forth from the person. So that's what I see as the meaning of this mitzvah. Any questions? Yeah.
When you describe